Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the union label.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show, where we follow the path illuminated by Alan's mantra. Folks, we want the Republicans out of our bedrooms, Democrats out of our wallets, and both out of our First and Second Amendment rights. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor for Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan today. Please check out our website at alannathan.com for our podcasts and our show times. A lot to discuss, lots going on in the world today, but I want to take a minute to kick it off by talking about the media, because the media is busy giving itself awards again. The Pulitzers came out, and this is a pretty mixed bag of Pulitzer awards here. This is kind of embarrassing in some ways, and it ties into, more or less simultaneously, most of the press freedom groups out there are putting out their Press Freedom in the World 2025 documents right now. They're putting out their reports. I guess you could say it's their interim reports, because they usually do something at the end of the year as well. So they're putting out these reports. And what they're all saying is that the great threat to press freedom is economic pressure being applied against journalism. In other words, journalists are going bankrupt. And that is the great threat to press freedom. And of course, Reporters Without Borders, which had the first of these reports that I saw this year, they made a point of blaming all this on, you guessed it, the bad orange man, Donald Trump, who is supposedly a huge threat to press freedom because he cut funding to USAID and to Voice of America, Radio Free Asia, U.S. state media outlets. And I guess after they did this report is when Trump said he's going to cut NPR and PBS funding. So they would have been really upset about that. So they're portraying Trump as this threat to press freedom because supposedly he's knocking the financial pillars out from under the media. And I would say this is about as wrongheaded as you could get. The real problem, press freedom guys, and I know you're very reluctant to admit this, you don't even want to discuss it over there, Reporters Without Borders, Committee to Protect Journalists, all these press freedom organizations. You know, I agree with you about the importance of press freedom 100%, but I really disagree with your analysis of what the problem is, because the real problem is being caused by the media itself in the Western world. That's not true everywhere. There's still places around the world where reporters get thrown in jail with dismal regularity because they file reports the regime doesn't like. But over here in the Western world, if the big problem is that the media is losing money and going bankrupt and firing staff, you know, as I guess the big media guys have all done lately, that's their fault. And press freedom groups don't want to admit this. They will never blame journalists themselves for any of the problems with media. It's almost like they're incapable of taking a hard look and saying, you know, I get why public trust in the media is low and major media orgs are losing staff and subscribers and viewers, that maybe we need to do better and recapture our audience. No, they never say that. They never say that. They always blame it on Donald Trump or some other external factor, somebody they don't like, instead of admitting that the problem is the media. Why wouldn't the problem be the media? After all, we're just coming out from under the shadow of the greatest media hoax ever perpetrated on the American people. And that is a tall bar to clear. Believe me, it's not the only big one in recent years, but that would be keeping Joe Biden in office. I mean, there's no sugarcoating this. The press lied to you every day through its teeth about Joe Biden's declining mental health for years to keep him in power. They were afraid of what would happen to their beloved Democrat Party if Biden was removed from office, if the public knew how shaky he was. So they covered for him with absolute devotion right up until 10 minutes before he dropped out of the race in 2024. And then one day the knives came out, et tu, Brute, except Brutus was played by George Clooney in this production. Knives came out, Biden's toast, and all of a sudden, instantaneously, remember, this is in a matter of hours, big media started saying, oh, well, we knew all along, of course, that Joe Biden was senile. Oh, really? Because 2 days ago, you were calling everybody who said that a liar and a cheap fake artist, and you were singing from the White House hymn book in unison to keep him in power. Oh, no, we always knew. And now they're giving each other awards over in Media World and writing books about the great story Joe Biden's dementia, as if they themselves were not part of the cover-up, but they were. They were enthusiastic members of the cover-up team. You can't sweep this under the rug. This is not something people are going to just forget about. It just happened. You know, it's six months old story that this was done. And it caused a critical failure of the already very weak public trust in the press. And there were lots of reasons it was weak, because that hoax came after the Russia collusion hoax. They whipped up at Hillary Clinton's behest to go after Donald Trump. It came after years of lousy reporting on the coronavirus and almost every aspect of it and everything pertaining to it. Remember another big story from recent years, the lab leak cover-up. Everyone with a brain knew all along that the coronavirus almost certainly came from the Wuhan Institute of Virology. But a small group of scientists with interests, financial interests, in the Wuhan Institute in cooperating with China worked hand in glove with the media to portray everybody who discussed the lab leak as some kind of a kook, and create this phony impression that actually all serious scientists know that this just spontaneously jumped out of a pangolin or something, or a bat, to affect the human race around the world. Nobody seriously into virological science ever really believed that. And as the years went by, less and less evidence of natural origin appeared, and more evidence of the lab leak appeared. And only now, after Trump won the election in 24, do we start seeing the U.S. government agencies admitting, oh yeah, we knew all along it was a lab leak. We always had high confidence that's what it was. But that was a gigantic media hoax about something that affected people's lives. So people have not gotten this. And if the media is going bankrupt, I would submit to all you press freedom advocates out there, you need to take a long, hard look at the media's role in making itself bankrupt by losing the faith and trust of the American people, and by really getting us to a point where, as news consumers, as regular folk, watching the TV, listening to the radio, reading the paper, anybody still does that, going to the websites, we can't trust them anymore. If there's any story out there with any political payload whatsoever, we all know by now that the Democrat Party's political spin will take absolute precedence over telling the truth to the public. They won't think twice about concealing details to accept Democrat media framework. Let me give you an example. The Pulitzer's come out, and one of the Pulitzer awards this year was to a group of website publication online called ProPublica, and they got a Pulitzer Prize for their reporting on Amber Thurman's death in 2022. Amber Thurman was a woman in Georgia who died as a result of side effects from an abortion pill. But they framed the story falsely. It's propaganda is what it is. They rewrote the story to make it look like Georgia's abortion laws are somehow what killed this poor woman, not the abortion pill. I mean, that's propaganda. That's false. It's a lie. The framing of the story was a lie. The essentials of the facts were there. The poor woman died, you know, had an abortion pill and she died. But the way they presented the story to you was propaganda. And that gets a Pulitzer. I'll give you another example. Another Pulitzer Prize goes to the Washington Post for its coverage of the attempted assassination of Donald Trump in Butler, Pennsylvania, during the 2024 campaign. Do you know how the Washington Post reported that? They covered up that it was an assassination attempt for as long as they could, and their report just said a loud noise was heard at the rally. I mean, at that point, there's pictures flooding the internet of Trump's ear gushing blood, you know, and the crowd screaming in the response of the police. But for crucial hours, for as long as they could, Washington Post minimized the story and said, oh, it was a loud noise. We don't know what happened. Something's up at the Trump rally down in Butler, Pennsylvania. I mean, they didn't completely, absolutely lie about it, but their framing of the story was just bizarre. The way they reported it during the crucial hours of that story taking shape was just bizarre. And that wins a Pulitzer. So, you know, I'm telling you that you guys in media world, if you're seriously interested in press freedom, and it's a real issue, as I said, I wholeheartedly support it, you have to look at the role the media itself has played in building this atmosphere of public distrust and disdain. They know they can't trust you anymore. That's one reason why shows like this are doing well. My home at Breitbart News is doing well. Alternative media exploded because they can't trust ABC, CBS, NBC, CNN, 60 Minutes. I mean, it's turned into a nonstop anti-Trump propaganda mill that would make North Korean media blush. But that's mainstream respectable journalism, we're told. And, you know, people are just tuning out from it. I would submit, even people that agree with the political angle here, that are Democrat voters, are tuning out a lot of this junk because they want real information, too. They don't want to be left behind. You know, regular people just want to be informed. They're not militants out there. And they know they can't trust the media to tell them the truth anymore. And it's killing media world. And here comes Committee to Protect Journalists, Reporters Without Borders, saying that the media running out of money and financial pressure is a great threat to press freedom. Well, it is, but let's put the blame on it where it belongs. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan today. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Baked beans might be a summer classic, but they can also bring a deliciously unexpected twist to your spring menu. Registered dietitian Amy Goodson has more.
Baked beans aren't just for summer. They're a tasty, easy addition to any spring meal. From Easter and springtime brunches to weekday dinners, Bush's baked beans bring rich taste, quick prep, and serious versatility, whether serving them straight from the can or adding your own twist.
From savory brunch bowls to traditional favorites, beans are finding their way into all kinds of seasonal dishes.
There are so many ways to enjoy baked beans. Try a build-your-own brunch bowl with a base like rice or sweet potatoes. Then add chicken, Bush's baked beans, coleslaw, tomatoes, creamy avocado, and a kick of jalapeno. I also love Grandma's favorite Bush's baked beans, loaded with beef, bacon, smoked sausage, and veggies. It's full of flavor and nostalgia, perfect for spring get-togethers.
For more baked bean inspiration and recipes, visit bushbeans.com. That's bushbeans.com.
It's been 5 years since the COVID-19 pandemic began, yet nurses continue to face significant stress and burnout. Brendan Martin, Research Director for the National Council of State Boards of Nursing, or NCSBN, has more.
The nursing community is facing persistent challenges, with nurses continuing to leave the field in record numbers. In fact, our 2024 National Nursing Workforce Study finds nearly 2 in 5 nurses plan to leave the profession by 2029.
More than 138,000 nurses left the profession since 2022, and a lot more nurses intend to leave the field within the next 5 years. Nurses face similar challenges across all levels and experience.
40% of nurses expressed that stress and burnout are among the top reasons for considering a job change. They also mentioned heavy workloads, understaffing, and feeling underpaid contributed to their desire to leave.
For more information on the National Council of State Boards of Nursing 2024 Workforce Study, visit ncsbn.org/workforce.
What I know about courage, I learned from my adoptive mom. She said sometimes you just gotta hold on and know we'll get through this.
Mom, we are so high up. Hold my hand.
No, you hold my hand.
Here we go.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more.
I learned patience from my adoptive dad. All he had to say was,
"Hey, you got this. Just breathe." Hey, we're pretty good.
Yeah.
Might have to start a band.
I got it.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care. You can't imagine the reward. Visit AdoptUSKids.org to find out more. This message is brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches. all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at pva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security with Breitbart News. The Trump administration came under some fire for reportedly attempting to deal directly with the terrorists of Hamas to secure the release of hostages that they were holding. Secretary of State Marco Rubio said it was a very brief one-off encounter and nothing came of it, so it was basically a dead end. But is it right for the Trump administration to try to work directly with Hamas in any way, even for the briefest of moments? And is this representative of some schism between the Trump administration's policies and Israel's? Here with us to talk about it is Ruthie Bloom, former advisor to the office of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, a current senior contributing editor at JNS, an award columnist, and co-host of the Israel Undiplomatic podcast. Welcome to the Alan Nathan Show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, the Trump administration, and especially Secretary of State Rubio, have said that this talk with Hamas was even pointless. It didn't go anywhere. It was just a stab. And they said we had to try. And even Steve Witkoff, who is Trump's major envoy, it was someone else. It was a hostage envoy. Nothing came of it. Does this represent any kind of break or difference between the Trump administration and Israel on Hamas policy?
I would say that what it represents is a rift within the Trump administration. We're seeing that there are basically two camps there. Actually, Rubio is in the camp, I would say, not in the same camp as Witkoff. There is the camp that believes that Make America Great Again means no more war, isolationism, et cetera. And the other camp says, well, you have to go to war to make America great again. You also have to be the greatest superpower in the world. And that means when you need to, you have to go to war to fight your enemies. So,
which is a fair contrast.
It is true. Excuse me?
That's the difference. I was going to say that's the difference between isolationism and what you might call, I guess, neo-isolationism or any variant of it. There are people that do think some involvement is necessary, that America's interests are reflected here. Hamas took Americans hostage. Let us never forget. So we're all in this together against terrorism. But there is a pretty signature difference between a completely hands-off approach and getting directly involved in trying to bring an end to this.
Well, that's correct. And that's so there is where the rift is. It isn't that Israel and the Trump administration are at odds. I would say that Israel is more on the side of those within the Trump administration who believe that there are things that are necessary to fight for. Now, it's not just that Hamas held Americans captive. Hezbollah slaughtered American Marines. You have the Houthis attacking ships in the Red Sea. There is a reason. These are interests that are American interests, not just Israeli. And I think that the people, I would say, you know, the people who follow Tucker Carlson, for example, have this mistaken idea that anything America does in the Middle East is somehow kowtowing to Israel or the Jewish lobby. And that's ridiculous. America has its own interests, and Israel happens to be its main ally in the Middle East. And in that respect, the interests often mesh. They're not identical, however.
There is a lot of pressure on Israel and on the U.S. right now over Gaza's humanitarian situation. The Israelis cut off humanitarian shipments to Gaza, and they said one reason they did it is because Hamas steals all that stuff and resells it. So it's one of their major funding streams, so to speak, so these shipments were supporting Hamas. But also the Israelis said they didn't honor their commitments to release hostages, so we have no choice but to go in there and finish the job. And the Israeli security cabinet voted yesterday to have an expanded military operation in Gaza. And meanwhile, the U.S. is under a lot of pressure from worldwide institutions, the United Nations, to step in and put a stop to this. What is the likely outcome you see in the next couple of months? Can Israel really put Hamas down for the count with a renewed military operation? Can they wipe them out?
Well, first of all, with regard to humanitarian aid, it's not only that Hamas was stealing it and reselling it and all that. it's that the United Nations was complicit in this for the first year of the war, at least. You had UNRWA distributing food and helping, but they were helping Hamas as well, you see. And now with this new, let's say, campaign about to start in Gaza, one of the elements of it is that there will be humanitarian aid distributed, but it will be distributed in one place in the south of Gaza, where the Israel Defense Forces will be encircling the areas so that only civilians who are not Hamas terrorists will be able to get the food, and it will be distributed by private companies and international help in some way. The UN has refused to help with this, of course, because, you know, when it's not Hamas, they're not interested. So there's going to be that happening, and that will persuade the civilians in Gaza to move southward so that Israel can take care of the north without constantly having to go back in. Go in, clean out terrorists in one area, go out, and then the terrorists rebuild in that area. So that's the idea of this new operation.
One of the big scams Hamas has been running in Gaza, which the UN has been turning a blind eye to, is that they run the money-changing operations over there. So if you're living in Gaza, you get your UN aid directly deposited into your account or what have you, so Hamas can't get it. But then Hamas says, okay, now you have to turn that money into local currency to buy at the market, and we'll be the ones changing those dollars for you. So they skim 30%, I think I saw, was one of the figures, off the top of every transaction, and that goes right into the Hamas treasury. The UN absolutely knows they're doing this, and they don't care. It's been proven that the UN knows they're doing this, and they won't stop it.
Oh, absolutely. The UN has been totally complicit, especially UNRWA, totally complicit. You know that there have been terrorists. There were UNRWA employees holding hostages, things like that. It's just outrageous. So now the question you asked me, whether this new operation will actually be successful or will it succeed in returning the hostages, et cetera. Now, I don't have an answer about whether Hamas will put enough pressure on Hamas to return to free the hostages, or whether Hamas will just execute all those still alive. That remains to be seen, and it's a very, obviously, it's a great concern. However, we cannot allow Hamas to remain in power and then commit October 7th again and again and again. And especially, all they'll learn is that it's worth their while to take hostages. Not only their while, but all Islamists over the world. They see what's going on, and they say, look, this works. You know, you just kidnap people. And then in the West, of course, we are so genuinely, we care about human life. And so every single hostage means something to us. They have a different attitude towards human life. And for them, it's cheap. And especially, you know, they're happy to use their people as human shields. And we try to rescue every single hostage. It's an imbalance.
Now, Prime Minister Netanyahu often says that all roads lead back to Iran, and President Trump was a big critic of the Iran nuclear deal in 2015. He said it enriched Iran and gave it the money it needed to finance Hamas and its other proxies. With the last few minutes here, do you see the Trump administration getting a better deal out of Iran, or do you think they're fated to slide right back into something similar to Obama's JCPOA?
Okay, well, I just don't believe there is such a thing as a good deal with Islamist radicals. And so there is no such thing. And I hope that President Trump will not fall for their scam.
Ruthie Bloom, former advisor to the office of Prime Minister Netanyahu and co-host of the Israel Undiplomatic podcast. Thanks for joining us. I'm John Hayward. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Zuzu is the story of an adorable hermit crab that actually mistakes a piece of plastic for its shell. There's a short film on joinzuzu.com that is this extraordinary short film about Zuzu's story. But also there's a petition online where people can go and easily, in just moments, sign this petition to advocate for federal EPR legislation. This is so important because this allows us to create a national strategy of collective action to scale up a solution to fix the recycling problem in this country. So I partnered with S.E. Johnson on the Zuzu movement because S.E. Johnson is one of those rare companies that is out at the forefront of this issue and pushing to recognize that companies have a responsibility to play in the system. It's not just about consumers recycling. Companies and the products that they create need to be recyclable. They need to take responsibility for the life cycle of those products, and that's what S.E. Johnson is doing. And for more information, go to joinzuzu.com and sign the petition.
The fan favorite series Leverage Redemption returns for its third season April 17th on Prime Video. The show follows a team of reformed criminals who prove sometimes it's good to be bad as they use their less than legal skills to help those in need fight back against the rich and powerful. In season 3, the team pits themselves against a power broker stealing the town's clean water, a pool hustler with a side business in international extortion, and a corrupt mayor who's the judge and jury of his small town, all while dodging a plan of vengeance from a past enemy. But no matter what, when someone needs help, they provide the leverage. Elise Shannon plays Brianna Casey, a brilliant engineer and hacker.
Audiences will love this new season. It's filled with big surprises, major action, lots of humor, and as always, a lot of heart. My character Brianna is still learning about the world of cons, but she brings her own spin to everything. Snarky humor, it's high tech, and she helps the team stop some truly awful people.
Don't miss Leverage Redemption, April 17th on Prime Video.
Hi, it's Practical Polly's radio show. If you're just figuring out that healthier cooking oils are better than solid fats, you may be asking, now what am I going to do with all these tubs of lard? Ever had one of those moments when your favorite skinny jeans feel too tightly tailored? Generously apply lard to your hips and thighs and those fancy pants will slide on like a dream. Or here's a family-friendly idea. How about making your yard into a lard fun park? Frost your driveway with a nice thick coating and give those kiddos a downhill thrill no matter what time of year. Having a bad hair day? Yep. A little lump of lard can tame your flyaways in a jiffy. So there's no need for that lard to go to waste or to your waste. But get your best heart-healthy trade-up with healthier oils, like canola, olive, or other vegetable oils, which can actually lower your chances for heart disease. Now that's a tip worth keeping for life. Learn more at heart.org/facethefats. Canola Info is the national supporter of the American Heart Association's Face the Fats campaign.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
This forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably?
It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay. Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor with Breitbart News. Lee Zeldin, the Chief of the Environmental Protection Agency, is talking about overhauls to the agency that will involve reducing its staff to the staffing levels of the Reagan administration, which would mean thousands of people. being let go. Understandably or predictably, environmental groups are just out beside themselves here. They say that this is cutting vital funding from research, but critics of the EPA say that it's been overstaffed and overfunded for an awfully long time, and it's about time to under better administrative control. Here with us to talk about it is Mandy Gunasekera, environmental attorney, energy strategist, formerly served President Trump as chief of staff at the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, and author of the book Y'all Fired, A Southern Belle's Guide to Restoring Federalism and Draining the Swamp. Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show.
Yes, to be with you.
So here we go. We're going to go down to the Reagan-era EPA, which was by no means a small administration, let us say. And the response is as though Trump had shoved the plunder on the dynamite that's going to blow up the earth. Like, we can't do this. People are going to die. We're going to lose all this environmental expertise. But I noticed that defenders of the current EPA staffing and funding have a lot of trouble pointing to anything it's doing with all those people that actually makes a difference.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Because what they've been doing with this excess staff and excess funding is largely creating a taxpayer money laundering scheme. I mean, the $20 billion slush fund made headlines, but the rot of wasted taxpayer resources goes much deeper. So Administrator Zeldin's review of the agency and willingness to cut back excessive staff is really, really important to restoring integrity and accountability to the agency's decisions, number one, getting politics out of it, number two, and number three, saving precious taxpayer resources, which really is a theme that President Trump focused on during the campaign and that we're seeing playing out at the cabinet level alongside the Department of Government Efficiency.
There's an old game played in Washington for decades now, and it's one of the reasons that we have so much money being spent in Washington, and that is that if you care about something, you authorize the government to spend money and hire people. And if you want to reduce the amount of money the government is spending and make it fire people, then you must not care about whatever that government agency is devoted to. In fact, you probably hate it. Probably dangerous. And that is, you know, that's an old song and dance we've been hearing for a long time. But that's an especially tough case to make with the EPA because it's been so bloated and so inefficient for so long. It's almost a parody of an out of control government agency.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And look, the EPA is the sacred cow of the Democratic left. It's because they have used the mandate of EPA, which is to protect public health and the environment. They've rebranded the agency, turned it into a political tool, and tried to convince the public that their actual job is to save the world from climate change. And in order to achieve this, they need unfettered access to taxpayer resources and the ability to hire people, whether or not they have tangible skills that can meaningfully contribute to the fulfillment of that stated mission. And so EPA has gotten a free pass for far too long, and that's why you see waste and corruption running rampant. And you're exactly right. That is the way of the U.S. government in so many different applications. But EPA really has been long overdue for this type of review. And I would argue, you know, this shows how much the president and certainly his cabinet official, Administrator Zeldin, care about the environment. They're focusing on doing what works, not just what's been done before, because clearly we had a lot of gaps during the Biden administration. You had things like the East Palestine, Ohio train spill, things that we should know how to do and we actually do. But the agency was so distracted by these larger global goals that they lost sight of it and they lost the ability to deploy resources when Americans actually needed it. So this focus, it's great for efficiency, but also proves how serious they are at taking the mission of the agency to advance environmental protection and to protect public health.
That's such a great point, because ever since the pseudo-religion of climate change gained this death grip over big government and bureaucracies about 30 years ago and became all they really talk about, we were making great progress on the environment. And if you leave the climate change stuff out of it and look at everything else the EPA was created to be in charge of, the progress over the past three or four decades is astounding. The amount of cleanliness we brought to the air, to the water, to industry is just incredible. But instead, we're told that none of that matters. And we're actually in the depths of the worst crisis the world has ever seen because of climate change.
Yeah, and that's so misleading because we actually have an amazing environmental record. When I was serving in the first Trump administration, you know, at that point we had achieved a 77% reduction in air pollutants. Another way to look at this is, and these trends continued under President Trump, we reduced air pollutants by 6%. And today we are breathing the cleanest air on record. And this really goes back to the 1970s when the agency started measuring the presence of various pollutants in air, water, and land. Some of these were legacy problems from the start of our industrial revolution, where frankly, we didn't quite understand the impact that industrial activity and human development had on surrounding ecosystems and the broader public health. We now understand that, we know how to address it, and we have the talent and resources to do it, but that is a much more focused and smaller pool of talent and resources than what currently is at EPA. And so going in and trimming the fat, getting rid of bloated bureaucracies that are there just because they sounded good or even worse, were put there to advance political goals like we saw in the Obama administration and the Biden administration, that's going to be really important to focusing the agency on what it does best. And we have a record that proves this up across the board.
And climate change is so beloved of democracies across the Western world because it's so open-ended. It can spend infinite amounts of money on endless studies and programs with no requirement whatsoever that any of it ever amount to anything or produce any kind of tangible results of any kind. It's basically just an unlimited fishing expedition to look for whatever the climate change movement wants to find. And that expedition always involves hiring a lot of people. If you look at every single thing the climate change movement wants to do, it always involves hiring huge numbers of people who then become very difficult to fire when it turns out the spending was excessive or their activities were not productive.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that is the beauty from the left, if you will, of their climate arguments, is that it's always so massive we can't understand it. It always requires so many more resources than we currently devote. And the outcomes, the purported outcomes, they're always going to be hundreds of years into the future. So none of us will be around to assess whether or not those investments were actually fruitful. But that's part of the game that they play. And sprinkle in, a little bit of emotional activism around it, and you've got the modern climate movement. But it really disregards the fact, if you look at it, the metrics, greenhouse gases, for example, the United States leads the world in overall greenhouse gas emissions reductions. And that's because naturally our markets prioritize efficiency. We don't need the heavy hand of the federal government coming in and telling businesses how to be more efficient. That is ingrained in running a better investment operation. And we have the record to prove this out. And it really stems from better innovation, which lends itself to better technology, which improves all environmental factors, including greenhouse gases. And the other thing that the left isn't going to talk about, I'm sure you saw this, there was a recent study that came out showing that, you know, how the Arctic ice has always been melting. That's been a key exhibit A of the justification for the crazy climate left. Well, we've actually gained more climate or more ice in the Arctic in recent years than anyone expected. There's been a reversing of the trend is how they're talking about it in scientific circles, which is just a really big shot at the bow for the climate movement that's been trying to point to that, saying, see, this justifies our extreme eco positions. But the problem with the climate change movement is typically Mother Nature doesn't go along with it. And this is just the latest iteration of that.
Well, and some of the things they point to as evidence for the climate change movement of urgency is actually human-related, like Canada's lousy foresting policies producing giant wildfires up there, or California's lousy policies leading to devastating fires. That wasn't global warming. That was man-made disaster and incompetence right there. And I noticed in the last couple of years, it seems like there's been a sea change in environmental politics, I think, is being reflected in this new EPA, because we're starting to notice the real cost of what they want to do to get to the carbon emissions that they claim are needed for the Paris Agreement and so on would deindustrialize the entire Western world. And nobody wants to go along with that. And also, some of the things the climate movement is doing are very injurious to the environment, like windmills killing birds. China's lithium mines are environmental atrocities, you know, that destroy the ecosystem for miles around every place that they dig. That's the cost of climate change lunacy. And it's actually hurting the environment.
Yeah, that's right. And that was a key theme of our international engagement in the first Trump administration. And I know that they're continuing it in this administration. It's like, if you really care about improving the environment, you want to integrate as much American technology into your industrial base as possible. So that's what we should focus on.
Mandy Gunasekera, environmental attorney, energy strategist, a visiting fellow at the Heritage Foundation, and author of the new book, Y'all Fired, A Southern Belle's Guide to Restoring Federalism and Draining the Swamp. Thanks for joining us today. I'm John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor of Breitbart News, sitting in for Alan. We'll be right back with more of The Alan Nathan Show.
Fashion consultants Stacey London and Clinton Kelly from the popular TV series What Not to Wear are back together again. And this time they're making over the makeover show with Prime Video's original new series, Wear Whatever the F You Want. In the new series, premiering April 29th, Stacey and Clinton are ready to transform clients in the fashion capital of New York City, helping them bring their fantasy look to life. Whether it's punk rock or eclectic bohemian artist, Stacey and Clinton empower individuals to live out their fashion fantasies and discover their style truth. Wear Whatever the F You Want offers a fresh perspective that celebrates personal expression over outdated style guidelines. It's all about freedom of expression without any rules. Don't miss the highly anticipated reunion of TV's favorite fashion experts, Stacey London and Clinton Kelly, in Wear Whatever the F You Want this Tuesday, April 29th, exclusively on Prime Video.
More than 7 million Americans are living with Alzheimer's disease, the highest number on record. A new survey from the Alzheimer's Association finds that nearly 4 in 5 Americans want to know early if they have the disease before symptoms interfere with their daily lives. Dr. Elizabeth Edgerly, Senior Director of Community Programs and Services at the Alzheimer's Association.
We found most people want to be proactive in addressing their memory concerns, even if it might be Alzheimer's. That's good news because early diagnosis offers the best opportunity for care and for treatment.
The survey also found most Americans are open to treatments that can slow the disease.
92% of people say they would take medication that could slow the progression of Alzheimer's, and nearly 60% would accept moderate to high risk with treatment. It was clear people want earlier diagnosis, access to new therapies, and support from day one.
Visit alz.org/facts to learn more.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries, from healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Are you excited about being a new grandmother?
Of course I am. A little intimidated, too.
Why?
Taking care of a baby today is so different than when I had you.
But, Mom, you did great with me.
Thanks, son. But I put you on your stomach to sleep.
Right. But now we know that babies should always be placed on their backs to sleep, for naps and at night, to reduce the risk of sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS.
You also slept with blankets and toys in your crib.
True, but now we know to keep everything out of the crib except for my sweet baby girl. No blankets, pillows, or other soft or loose items.
Daddy's going to teach Nana all the ways to keep you safe while you sleep. Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
For more tips on safe sleep for babies, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. That's safetosleep.nichd.nich.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment. This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm your guest host today, John Hayward, Deputy National Security Editor at Breitbart News. When I was talking to Mandy Gunasekera a minute ago, we mentioned a piece of news that I guarantee you have not seen reported very much. It's hilarious how underreported this is, because it's what the media would consider a narrative violation. They have certain narratives that they adhere to. And if information, if news comes along that violates the narrative, they bury it. They might report it, but they'll do it on page B38 in a very perfunctory way, and they won't give it the kind of nonstop exposure they give to news that they like. This is another reason, tying into the beginning of the hour, why the media is losing money hand over fist and subscribers are turning away from them, because you can't trust them. So here comes the biggest environmental story of the decade, I would say, to date. And that is that the Arctic sea ice is growing, not shrinking, or the Antarctic sea ice. The Antarctic sea ice, which is pointed to as the signature element of global warming. That's how they know global warming is real, because the sea ice was melting and the oceans were going to rise and we're all going to die and we're all going to be flooded in a couple of years now, unless you stupid deplorables give up your cars and your air conditioners and learn to live in a more primitive way that's friendlier to the earth. That's the whole global warming narrative. Well, they did a big study of the Antarctic sea ice. They just published the results last week. And it turns out that starting in 2001, the Antarctic sea ice layer started getting bigger and thicker, a lot bigger and thicker. So in other words, the whole degradation of sea ice over the preceding decade that was supposed to be the evidence, the smoking gun of global warming, was not true. It was just a natural variation and it reversed. Didn't reverse for any good reason. Nothing happened that humans did that would explain this. It's just nature, just the way it is. But a lot of the global warming cult, the religion of global warming, of climate change, is about looking at disparate variables that don't connect to each other or to human activity and weaving a narrative, a ghost story, about how it's you and your life and your children that are actually destroying the world. And you have to accept more government control, more government spending, higher taxes, a lower standard of living in order to turn around this activity that's supposedly killing us. At no time in the 30-odd years of global warming, climate change, pseudoscience, has anyone ever come close to proving that human activity actually does anything bad to the environment. People don't understand this. There's never been any kind of bulletproof study that says, yep, we found the magic control knob of the atmosphere, and it's carbon dioxide, and we're creating too much greenhouse gas, and that's why the world is warming. They've never come close to proving that. It's just taken as an article of religious faith. CO2, carbon dioxide, is produced by the kinds of industry and comforts that the climate scientists don't like, and so that's why they were able to build a very profitable political, religious, and above all else, bureaucratic movement around climate change. Climate change is a license for unlimited spending. It's an unprovable hypothesis. No matter whatever happens, no matter the sea ice, the Arctic sea ice getting bigger down there, I guarantee you there is no true believer in climate change out there, nobody whose money depends on climate change, who is looking at that data and saying, oh boy, we got this wrong, kids. The sea ice is growing and we said that was impossible. We need to rethink our no, they're not doing that. They're going to double down. They're going to find some way to tell you that this doesn't really matter, even though the day before yesterday, they told you Antarctic and Arctic sea ice were the only thing that matters, and they're just going to soldier on. There is no way to disprove their hypothesis, no matter what happens. And if you look at what's happening in the global climate movement right now, all you see to the horizon is special exemptions and carve-outs and environmental damage being overlooked for purely political reasons, Like, they know they can't do anything about an authoritarian country like China, so they just don't bother to complain about China's sky-high levels of pollution. We're many, many times cleaner than China is over here in the U.S., but we get no credit for it, and China gets no criticism for it, because climate change is purely political. China is the head of an organization called BRICS. It's an economic collective that includes the so-called developing nations of the world, which China hilariously pretends it still is, even though it's the second largest economy on the planet now, but they still claim they're a developing nation when it suits them to have that pretense. So they claim they're the leader of the developing nations. And BRICS keeps having summits. That's what they do. They have summits a couple times a year. And they keep having these summits where they say, we're not going to make any sacrifices for climate change. No, no, no. We demand you over in the Western world, Europe, the United States, you people have to make all the sacrifices. We're going to build coal plants. You know what we're going to do over here in BRICS land? We're building coal-fired power plants, baby, with mountains of coal piled to the sky. And we don't want to hear you say a single word about it because it's your problem. Climate change is your fault. And the climate change movement basically shrugs and says, okay, that's fine. You guys are our third worlders, people of color. You shouldn't be expected to make any sacrifices. Of course, you want more electricity to fuel your growing industry, so we're just going to give you a pass. And if you were logically interested in all of this as a matter of science, you would say, well, hang on a second. You can't give 80% of the world a pass and expect the U.S. and Europe to single-handedly shoulder the burden of reducing climate emissions. You know who else isn't going to be reducing climate emissions? India. India is the fastest growing environment economy in the world, industrial base. And they have said repeatedly, right to your face, they don't make any secret about it, they are not going to make any compromises to their industrial and different climate change. They're going to burn as much coal and fuel oil and everything else as they think they need to do. And the climate change movement says, okay, we have no control over India. We're not interested in getting into a fight with the Indians. So we're just going to let that slide. So it's like I said, it's not science. It's a religion. And it's also political. It's a political bureaucratic fusion that disposes of inconvenient science and facts whenever it can in order to get the outcome it desires. And the two big problems, mentioned one of them before the break, one of them is that it's increasingly clear that a lot of what the climate movement is doing is hurting the environment. Big example would be your wind farms carving birds into ground beef out there, killing all these endangered bird species. And they don't care because the climate change imperative to build wind farms transcends traditional environmentalism to them, caring about animals and the environment and so on. Solar panels turn out to degrade and seep toxic chemicals into the ground where you built the solar panels, and they don't care. You know, it's causing all kinds of damage to the soil, the environment around these giant solar arrays, and they don't care because climate change transcended. It neutralized, it negated the old environmental concerns. And all that matters is reducing carbon emissions. And the other factor that's changing the game all around the world, around the civilized world, is people are beginning to realize what is needed to reach the goals of, say, the Paris Climate Agreement. You hear about that all the time. It's always cited as if it was some binding treaty. It's not, that settled for how to save the world conclusively. And in order to reach the Paris Climate Treaty's goals, you can't have a car, kids. There's no way to get to the numbers they laid out in the Paris Treaty without massively deindustrializing the entire civilized world. And up until a couple years ago, they kind of hid that and just kept saying, we want you to make reasonable sacrifices, use a bit less gas, buy a hybrid. Now they're telling you, you have to change your life, and people are not willing to do it. And that's where climate science is at right now. I'm John Hayward, sitting in for Alan today. Thanks very much for joining us on this hour of the Alan Nathan Show.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.